All lines are now bridged.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome back. Hope you are enjoying your summer so far and enjoyed a bit of a break from our recent group of meetings for the proposed rule, but now we're ready to turn our attention to the TEFCA with our first set of draft recommendations today. So with that, we'll jump right into it, starting with a roll call. Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Robert Wall.
Morning. Present.
Michael Adcock.
Present.
Tina Caraballo.
Present.
Tina Esposito.
Here.
Cynthia Fisher. Okay. Valerie Gray, I believe she is going to be absent today. Anil Jain.
Present.
John Kansky.
I'm here.
Ken Kawamoto. I believe we have Ken on. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Okay. Les Lunard. Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Jenny McCollum.
Present.
Tim McDonald. Not yet. Aaron Meary.
Good morning.
Good morning. Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
Good morning. Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Michael Lennon. I believe he's the one. Steve Reedy.
Present.
Asha Turner.
Good morning.
Andy Sosa. I believe he may be absent as well. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Denise Webb.
Present.
Kate Goodrich. Mark Roche. Laura Kahn.
Present.
Ram Charan.
Good morning.
And Terry Adderham. Not yet. Okay, and with us from ONC, we have Elise Sweeney Anthony, Steve Posnack, Beth Brzezinski, myself, and I will now turn it over to our national coordinator, Dr. Ruffer.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Welcome. Want to again thank everybody for all of the work on the rule recommendations. I know it took a ton of time. Hell, it took a while to read. Actually, I did read all of it. I want to thank you. I want to thank Carol and Robert for bringing this to the finish line. I did want to give one HITECH member update. Patrick Soon Chong has resigned from HITECH. We would like to thank him for throwing his hat into the public fray here. And we will be working with the relevant, I guess, nominating entity, who I believe is Ranking Member McCarthy, for that appointment. But we'll do that for a replacement. The only other reminder is where anticipating the final recommendations on the Trust Exchange Framework and Common Agreement on July 11th. I think we're going to have some of that today to start. And now I'd like to turn it over to Carolyn and Robert. Thank you.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining in again. For those of you on the West Coast, I know it's super early. I'm here in Oregon as well. And Carolyn is also on the West Coast. And again, thanks to the entire HITECH for all the work that you've done to get the comments in for the proposed rule, as the national coordinator mentioned. We look forward to a robust discussion today of the TEFCA recommendations that we'll be putting forward. And I'll turn it over to Carolyn for her comments.
Thanks, and good morning, everyone. It's great to see us all here after a few weeks' rest from the NPRM work. Looking forward to getting started on our TEFCA discussions today. And we will start out initially with an overview of where the annual report work group is at, followed by the TEFCA discussion. We do need to approve the meeting minutes from the May 13 and May 22nd meetings. Could I have a motion, please?
Motion.
And is there a second?
Second.
Would all those in favor of approving the minutes from the May 13 and May 22 meetings please signify by saying aye?
Aye.
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 And all those opposed saying nay? And are there any abstentions? Okay, it looks like we have approved the minutes for the May 13 and May 22 meetings. I have no further comments unless you do, Robert. If not, we can move into the annual report update.
Sounds good.
Great, thank you. So as last year, Erin, Mary, and I are co-chairing this work group. Erin, I believe, is traveling in a car right now, so I will take us through the slides, and then we will jointly host any discussion about it. Good morning, Erin. Safe travels.
Thank you.
So just our basic update, we'll go through the membership and scope, we'll review our meeting schedules, and then we'll update you as to where we are with our planning for the fiscal year 2019 report. May I have the next slide, please? Our membership, myself and Erin, Christina Caraballo, and Brett Oliver, and we have several staff members from ONC working with us to prepare the report, as well as some contractor resources to help with research and writing. Next slide, please. Our overarching scope is to inform, contribute to, and review draft and final versions of the HITECH annual report that's submitted to the HHS Secretary and Congress each year. As part of that report, we will help track ongoing HITECH progress. That's something we didn't do last year because we were in our first year. It will be a new section in our report this year. Next slide. So going into more detail, our report should involve an analysis of HITECH progress, assessment of health IT infrastructure and advancements, analysis of existing gaps in policies and resources, and ideas for potential HITECH activities. All of this is required by the 21st Century Cures Act. Next slide, please. We'll look now at our meeting schedules. The work group itself has already met in April and June. We are currently scheduling dates for our work in July, August, and September, and then as well into the fall. We will continue to discuss topics and outline the report through the summer, and then in the fall begin drafting and bringing information to the full HITECH for review and discussion. Our goal is to finalize the fiscal year annual report and pass it on to the National Coordinator for review to Congress and HHS in February. So we're looking at being a little bit ahead of where we were last year because we're able to get an earlier start. The next slide, please. So our review schedule for the full committee, we're updating you today. We don't expect to do any updating in July, of course, and we don't meet in August. So in September, we will come back to discuss topics and the outline for the annual report. Then in October and November, we will be updating you on where we're at with progress. There's no meeting in December, we hope. And then in January, we will bring forward the review draft to the full HITECH. And in February, we look to approve the final version. And then again, move that on to the National Coordinator. Next slide, please. So now we get into the planning portion. Next slide. This is our draft outline for the annual report for fiscal year 19. It is pretty much the format that we used for the fiscal year 18 draft report, except that we have added in the section on the HITECH progress. As you can see here, we're putting that after the forward and overview and ahead of the landscape and gap analyses and the other information. So we're really bringing that to the front to draw eye to the work that we have done to date. Next slide, please. Here is a list of potential topics for the annual report. Since we prepared and passed on the fiscal year 18 report in April, we have been meeting to look at what's happening in the field and the industry, and also revisiting items that were carried over from last year's discussions. So the carryover items for the annual report would be ONC's Cures Act regulations. That's information blocking, certification enhancements, and the implementation of APIs. There's the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement. Of course, we're still working through that. There are implications of privacy legislation, cybersecurity framework adoption, and concerns beyond the scope of HIPAA coverage. We have measurement ideas from report recommendations and for usability. Patient-controlled data collection, access, and sharing. The reality gap between the perception of what has been certified for a system and what is truly interoperable in the field. Research data ecosystem and governance, and social determinants of health, patient-generated health data, and the Internet of Things. Next slide, please. And then, based on some comments that we received from HITECH members during the review of the annual report for fiscal year 18, we have some additional topics. That would be challenges with incorporating and reconciling data received from various external sources, cross-state data exchange and privacy considerations, for example, the exchange of imaging reports and images, highlights of data quality initiatives, that would be things like what the Veterans Health Administration is doing, patient matching and patients' electronic address information, policy and trust issues related to open APIs, and price transparency and patient access to price information. Next slide, please. And then some of the ideas that the annual report work group has come up with to date include consumer access to immunization data, data segmentation, direction, and impact, digiceuticals and digital therapeutics, that the apps used as treatment, integration of prescription drug monitoring programs with EHRs, broader provider burden reduction opportunities. Of course, that's a priority for ONC. Sociogenomics, that would be the intersection of social determinants of health and genomic data in healthcare and research, and standardization of provider notes to enable use and sharing while considering liability implications. The next slide, please. The annual report workgroup is particularly interested in a couple of things. First, describing HITECH concerns about recent areas of ONC activity, for example, information blocking and the TUFCA. We think the annual report is a really good place to circle back and include any other things that came out in discussion that were not easily accommodated in the transmission letters or in other ways that we work with ONC. And also considering next steps for the measurement mentioned in the recommendations from the HITECH annual report for fiscal year 18. You know, a number of individuals, including people on the work group, had been really concerned about looking at metrics and finding some ways to measure progress. So we think this is of particular importance in our fiscal year 19 report. We have a couple of discussion questions that we'd like to bring to HITECH today. First, are there any questions or comments about the draft outline and these topics that we've identified so far? And what topics should be added to or removed from this list of potential topics for the upcoming report? Next slide, please. So with that, I'd like to open the discussion and bring Aaron in as well. Robert, would you mind, I guess I could see hands if there were any. Okay. We'll start with Arian.
Hey, thank you for that and for the update. Am I to understand in the first section where you're talking about priority topics and you talk about privacy not related to HIPAA, would part of that scope be a potential recommendation for Congress to establish a more uniform privacy law that stitches together across HIPAA and FTC regulation and creates a broader privacy framework for patient data?
We haven't actually come up with specifics around that topic, but we certainly could.
But that could be included in as one of the topics. Okay, thank you.
That's an option. Yep. I didn't catch all that as you were saying it, but I'm making a note to double back in the meeting notes afterward and take that out and put it on our list when it's in writing.
Gotcha. And that was a topic that was also identified by the national coordinators in their letter to Don, that we have a sort of a patchwork of privacy regulation. And in some cases we cover things under HIPAA, and other cases we cover things under FTC, and in other cases we cover things under the Research Common Rule, and that's currently an area of legislative gap.
Okay, that sounds great. We will capture that off the transcript and be sure to get that on the list, and perhaps circle back with you for further discussion as we go forward.
Thank you.
It's Don, Arian, as a heads up, there's a lot of congressional interest in this as well. You know, we're getting requests for technical assistance, looking at some language. I would say all of that is early, but there is a lot of interest in that.
That's good news.
Do we have additional questions or comments from others?
It's Carolyn, this is Robert.
Yes.
I'd also say to the committee that I think the planning of our annual report is a good time to also think about those things that we want to take on this year as a committee. We've had, I think, one or two sessions talking about the things that we wanted to take on as a committee that are maybe outside the more prescriptive parts of the CARES Act that set this committee up. And so I think this is also our opportunity to think as a group about areas of work that we're seeing from our different perspectives and areas of responsibility that impact on healthcare and the intersection of healthcare and technology. So I hope folks will think about looking at the annual report from that lens as we put together the plan for the next year.
Are there other questions or comments from the full high tech? Aaron, do you have any comments to share or other thoughts about suggestions and discussions on the topics?
No, I appreciate it. I would echo that it would be appreciated for the committee just to consider and think about over the course of the year. We know last year we were a little bit rushed because that was our first year, but this year we have the full year. If there are other items, just like Arian's mention of the privacy and security mismatch between states and federal, just be thinking about those and please send them our way.
Denise, you have your hand up?
Yes, thank you. So as I look at the list of potential topics, it's a pretty expansive list, and I guess what I'm trying to understand and would like some clarification on it is what does that imply for the committee? Are those all topics that we're going to work on and then report on, or are we just reporting on the current state of those topics? It seems like a pretty expansive list, and so I'm just trying to get my head around that.
Yep. Part of our charge is to do a landscape and gap analysis. Those are things that we are required to do as part of the Cures Act. And so we are coming up with this list of topics for which we will do the landscape and gap analysis. And from that, HITECH can choose to take on other particular activities, or it can just simply comment upon those areas that, you know, in ways that the group agrees upon. At this point, we're still kind of determining what should be involved in those analyses, what we should include, but there is no specific requirement that we take action on any of the items. That's up to us to decide what we want to do going forward.
That helps a lot, Carolyn. I think even still doing a landscape assessment and a gap analysis, that's not a small matter on some of those topics. So I'm just thinking about resources and time to do that.
Right, and ONC does have contract resources, individuals who work with our ONC report partners who can do some of that research for us and bring it forward to the work group so that we can assess and determine, you know, what is appropriate to include in terms of the right level of detail and the right direction that's relevant to our work. Yeah, it's true. If the four of us were trying to do all of this ourselves, that would be quite a challenge. But fortunately,
or even,
partners.
Or even more than the four of you, you know, it's a pretty substantial amount of work.
It's a pretty comprehensive report that we put together, but we feel that that's appropriate. And given the depth and breadth of expertise on the HITECH, you know, that's the right way to go.
Thanks for the clarification.
Happy. Yep. Do we
Carolyn,
have
this is Robert again.
Yep, go ahead.
It occurs to me also that one point we might want to make is the work that we're trying to do with the NCVHS, particularly the part about prior authorization improvement. I don't know if you want to get that specific or just use the broader heading of coordinating and working with the NCVHS as well.
We will include that in the progress report section, but certainly there may be topics that spring from that work that we can add to the list of other topics and things that should be included in the landscape and gap analysis. I'm making a note of that on my list, and we will add that to our spreadsheet. Thank you.
Because hopefully we'll go, I don't know when we'll do it, but there may well be more meetings with them. And I know Les is working on his prior authorization idea and work white paper, so that might be something to flag in there.
Okay. Thank you.
With Steve Lane.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Steve.
Well, I don't see any other hands. Last chance to make a comment or ask a question. Seeing and hearing none, I will say thank you for the discussion and the additional items for us to add to our list for the annual report. And I will hand the mic back to Robert for the next agenda item.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thanks to both of you for your work on this last year and this year, you and Aaron, to put together this annual report process. And again, for the committee, as you think of things that you'd like to suggest the annual report group look at, please send them in. Like I said, I think this is our opportunity to think about our work going forward for the next year, but also to reflect back on the issues that you're seeing from your areas that you work in. It's a lot of work to do this report, but I think it's an important contribution to document where we're going and what we've already done. So thank you, Carolyn and Aaron, for that. And I think with that, we're going to turn it over to John and Arian for just starting to discuss our Trusted Exchange Framework draft recommendations. And I think there's another deck for that. So I'll turn it over to John and Arian.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning to everybody. And first, I'm going to start out by acknowledging happy birthday to my co-chair, Arian Malik.
Thank you.
Hey.
Yeah, well, great way to spend your birthday. Two great ways to spend your birthday.
Yep.
So thanks to the task force for their work, and I will say so far, because what we have today is draft recommendations so far, and have more water to carry. And the ONC team has been great in helping us get this far. If we could go to the charge slide, please. or the member slide. Thank you. So this is our team, including the task force and the ONC members, and they've been great so far. A lot of diverse opinions and professionally delivered input, as usual. Next slide, please. So our charge, the detailed charge for the task force was originally articulated as the bottom four bullets, and with the support from the ONC team, we have included some overarching recommendations related to the value proposition of TEFCA and the alignment with information blocking and applicable law. The rest of the detailed charge was to provide some feedback on the definition, structure, and applications for the QHIN process, including eligibility and application, the exchange purposes and modalities, including the 7 exchange purposes and 3 modalities proposed in the MRTCs, as well as reciprocity and permitted and future uses, and then both the privacy and security requirements included in TEFCA 2. Next slide, please. Next slide. So first I wanted to stress that these slides correspond with the draft transmittal letter that you also have, and the recommendations are draft, and there's noted in some places where we have additional discussion that we need to have, but look forward to your input today. There'll be additional recommendations that'll be forthcoming. The ones that we have today cover the first 3 bullets of the charge, and then the beginning of privacy covering meaningful choice, and the remainder of the charge is to be those recommendations to be forthcoming. All right, so recommendation number 1 is largely aimed at considerations of adoption of TEFCA and the need to incentivize adoption. This started with an acknowledgement that the broad policy aim of TEFCA is and should be better treatment, quality of care, and a more efficient healthcare system, that for TEFCA to achieve or advancing those specific policy aims, it's going to need to do that while complementing and coexisting with existing frameworks, and also being sufficiently and appropriately adopted. In the transmittal letter, there are some additional details that we mention, but largely the complementing and coexisting is with the existing HINs and frameworks is consistent with 21st century cures, but also takes advantage of significant progress the industry has made, especially in recent years. And then the second bullet, trying not to just say, it has to be adopted, so figure it out. We've tried to offer some suggested tactics that could be used to incentivize, including some things that resemble carrots and some things that resemble sticks. Recommendation number 2 is focused on aligning the TEFCA specifically. Most of our discussion has been around information blocking, including that the definitions that are applied for actors and EHI, for example, are going to be applied across both rules, and then just encouraging ONC to consider the definitions that will be relevant across both, across the TEFCA framework and across the information blocking regulation when they are applied in both contexts that they make sense. The next two bullets regarding good faith participation, but not a safe harbor, are sort of a pair in that good faith participation in TEFCA should constitute should not, it doesn't guarantee that an organization is not information blocking, but in terms of network exchange purposes, uses, and modalities that are part of TEFCA, participating in TEFCA and not information blocking should be consistent. But the next bullet, again, I think underscores that the task force believes that TEFCA should not, participation in TEFCA should not be a safe harbor from information blocking, in that they're not, the TEFCA and the information blocking regulation do not have the same purpose.
Maybe put a little color commentary there. So, TEFCA is not coextensive with all of the activities that are associated with information blocking. TEFCA doesn't really cover API-based access, doesn't cover local access in a health information network. So by definition, participation in the TEFCA can't address all of the information blocking requirements. I think our point here is that to the extent that an organization is participating in good faith in TEFCA and making information more broadly available across networks, that at least for those portions of information blocking, good faith participation should be a key consideration relative to information blocking, so that there's a really an incentive that participation in TEFCA is the easiest, safest, fastest path to address information blocking requirements that are broader and cross-network in nature.
Thank you. Second to last bullet is expresses the opinion that TEFCA should not be a condition of certification, nor should it, the information blocking requirement require TEFCA participation. And then the last bullet is really just acknowledging the careful balance that is necessary. With that, asking,
John.
Yes, please.
John, this is Robert. It occurs to me that this is our first, it's not our first chance as a committee, but with the new set of recommendations, I think there is a lot of first-time exposure here. And these slides have a lot of information on them. I'm thinking maybe we'll just take a pause after each slide because of all the information that's displayed there to ask for comments from the committee. And I'm sorry if I'm slowing down your rhythm here, but I think this will be easier than trying to scroll back to the slide after you've gone through several.
No, I think that feels right to me, too.
Yeah, because I look at this slide and I see a lot of information. I want to make sure people have a chance to digest it and comment on it while it's still up for display. So maybe we can take a pause after each slide. I like the way you're presenting it. That's great. But allow comments about the slide that's currently presented, because I want to make sure we have a good opportunity to have a full discussion of this. And I see Christina has her hand.
Great. Thank you, Robert. Thank you both for putting this together. They're really great recommendations. Arian, happy birthday. I do have a concern with the recommendation on here that with the participation in TEFCA not being a condition of certification or requirement of information blocking. I understand that there needs to be a balance and we need to kind of adapt to existing frameworks, but I see this as a major problem. I do think that the whole point of establishing the framework is to make it required that folks participate. I think when I think of the conditions of certifications, I think it doesn't necessarily mean that a vendor, in my opinion, you don't necessarily have to participate in the TEFCA, but I think that there should be a path in certification, that in order to be a certified product, you need to have clear paths for your clients to be able to easily connect to a QHIN of their choice. So that functionality needs to be in place as part of certification. Then for the information blocking piece, I think that it should be a requirement for everybody that is a participant within the TESCA to kind of check the box of the information blocking by being a participant in the TESCA, or else I just really don't think that people are going to participate. And I think that it's just really important that it is a requirement.
Hey, so first of all, thank you for those comments. Maybe I'll take them in order. So for the first one, it's a really important comment. We should take it back to the task force that as the so-called QTF, the QHIN technical framework, gets established, there may be pathways to certification there. It's important to note that the TEFCA doesn't mandate or define the EHR to HIN side of the connection. And there may well be some missing standards and certification there. So it might be appropriate for the task force to consider a comment or recommendation that as the QHIN technical framework is fleshed out and real-world tested, that there's an opportunity for certification. On the second point, I think we're saying the same thing, and maybe we just need to say a stronger version of the same thing. So as a technical point, the TEFCA is a sub-regulatory framework. It's not a rule, and it's not instantiated in a rule. So there's, I don't think there's a technical way by which ONC could mandate participation in the TEFCA. But I think we're saying exactly the same thing that you are, which is that there's a whole set of obligations that providers and health information networks and health information exchanges have to offer up data for permitted uses, permitted purposes, and that data requirement is not local and it's not network bound. So it's not, I only have to offer up information in my network. I have to offer up information to any requester for a legitimate permitted purpose. And so our intent here is to say that the TEFCA should be the natural, obvious, simple, easiest path to address those requirements. You know, we might have gotten a little lost in the drafting language and trying to make sure that it really is what's intended to be, which is a voluntary participation, and so you can't have too many carrots if you're a voluntary participation framework. Too many sticks if you're a voluntary participation framework. But clearly, I think we're saying the same thing, that the carrot here should be this is the natural, easiest, fastest way to address those portions of information blocking that require cross-network exchange. Great comments. Thank you.
Are there other hands?
Go ahead. Sorry, John, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I can't see the hand, so I'll depend on you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, other comments about these first two recommendations from the task force? Seeing no hands. John, why don't you go ahead and proceed?
Okay, thank you. So we are on move on to recommendation 3A and 3B, please. Thank you. So now this is the section where of our charge where we are focused on how TEFCA looks and works in the context of applicable law. And the largest consideration the task force is discussing is the need for clarity between the Trusted Exchange Framework and the HIPAA regulation. So 3A and 3B are a pair, and 3A says basically whenever possible, align the TEFCA privacy and security obligations with the HIPAA privacy and security obligations. While there's an understanding that there are new exchange purposes in TEFCA that go beyond HIPAA TPO and that EHI expands the relevant data beyond protected health information, that to the extent possible, the obligations should be aligned. And 3B suggests that to minimize confusion or misinterpretation, that the TEFCA should really, wherever it's specifically different, in terms of the privacy and security requirements of TEFCA are specifically different than HIPAA, that they should be called out clearly, and where they're the same, they should be called out clearly just to make the regulation easy to understand and implement. The framework to implement in the context of the HIPAA regulation. Pausing for hands.
Comments from the committee on these two recommendations, 3A and 3B? Questions, comments? Seeing none, John, move on.
Thank you. Recommendation 4, please. So there is an understanding that health information networks and health information exchanges are going to need to amend the terms and conditions of their participation agreements in order to be able to sign the ultimate common agreement and participate in the QHIN exchange network. And furthermore, that those requirements, the implications of those changes are going to need to flow down and impact participant and participant member agreements as well. So minimizing the need to do that and minimizing the extent of those changes is desirable. So we're trying to suggest, so the last phrase in that lead-in paragraph is such means as, meaning we're trying to offer some ideas, possible tactics about how to minimize that disruption. These require a little bit of explanation. So the first suggestion is that allowing the RCE with respect to QHINs and QHINs with respect to participants some latitude to agree to bootstrap periods. So basically the ability to say that, okay, your RCE can say you're a QHIN, acknowledging that we've agreed that you have time to amend your contracts and giving the RCE some latitude to say what needs to be amended and in what time frame is reasonable, while still allowing that organization to be a QHIN in good standing. And then slightly trickier is allowing QHINs to do something similar with respect to participants, and obviously the RCE would need to have some role in that, and suggesting that the cohort that the RCE may be able to utilize with respect to QHINs, the cohort tactic that's discussed in TEFCA 2 to do that. Second potential tactic is to allow this evaluate and sort of an evaluate and approve process between the RCE and the QHIN and the QHIN and the participants. So the idea here is that the RCE could look at a current participation agreement of a QHIN candidate and suggest places where those two organizations could agree to places where amendments to their participation agreements were necessary and places that they weren't, and that, again, that a similar process could be between the QHINs and the participants, with the RCEs having a clear governance over that process. So trying to be clear, the idea is that to minimize, to leave as much of the existing participation agreements that have been successful in HIEs and HINs building their networks, leaving as much of those terms and conditions undisturbed. And then finally, the third potential tactic, which is a bit of an homage to HIPAA security, is to consider whether certain terms of TEFCA could be classified as required and others as addressable, meaning you got to do these and you really should give these serious consideration. And with that, I will pause for comments or questions.
Great, thank you. Questions, comments on recommendation 4 before you on the slide? Again, seeing no hands up, why don't we proceed, John?
Okay, thank you. Looking at move to recommendation. Oh, let's start, yeah, pause there for a second. So just acknowledging that we're moving on to recommendations related to the QTF, including the exchange purposes and the exchange modalities. And there was plenty of discussion here. So move on to the next slide, please. The recommendation 5 is encouraging, in general, encouraging ONC to specify, to frame TEF in terms of policy and functional requirements, and to defer technology solution specifics to the RCE. There is some perception of the need to be careful in the alignment of what's in the QTF, which what is in the MRTCs. I invite Arian, do you want to weigh in and add color on this one at all?
Sure, yeah. So the draft QTF names a number of standards that each of them come along with their own functional requirements. And in some cases, in the TEFCA 2, there are diagrams that describe some of the interactions of the standards in ways that go above and beyond and don't necessarily map cleanly to the MRTC-defined functional requirements. I think the task force had some difficulty in understanding what the functional requirements were. So the intent of this recommendation is just to make sure that the technical specifications address the functional requirements and that we don't have the needs of the technical specification accidentally becoming functional requirements or described as functional requirements in TEFCA 2 or the final version of TEFCA.
Thank you. Recommendation 6 is acknowledging that we believe there's a specific gap between the requirements of the information blocking regulation and the TEFCA, what's described in TEFCA, and encouraging ONC to address the gap. What we are specifically calling out is that information blocking requires the exchange of all EHI, whereas TEFCA calls on participant members to exchange at a minimum EHI, which is in US CDI that's available. So that creates a higher expectation to avoid information blocking than is implied in TEFCA, and that gap may be manageable, acknowledging that additional responsibility for TEFCA participants, if you want to exchange more information in a situation where you're not under an information blocking exception, then you would need to do that, but better would be to close the gap or address the gap in whatever way ONC feels would be appropriate. I will acknowledge that the task force needs some more discussion on this because the two obvious choices are either say that in TEFCA you have to exchange all EHI, mm-hmm. or say in information blocking that at a minimum exchange EHI and USCDI to avoid information blocking. With that, I'll pause for comments.
Thanks, John. So comments, questions on recommendations 5 and 6, as you see on the slide.
Don Rucker, on recommendation 5, it would be helpful to have some of the specific instances. We don't need that now, but maybe just as an email to Lauren or something like that, that would be helpful.
Zoe's been staying super close to all of this, so and I think we can enumerate some of the examples.
Okay. Other questions or comments about recommendation 5 and 6? Okay. Done. You can proceed.
Thank you. So moving on to recommendations 7 and 8. 7 is the cousin of 5. We discussed this, that there may be some opportunity to combine these or tease out the nuance between them. This speaks to, in general, minimizing the QTF and allowing, giving RCE the latitude to manage what will be evolving technical approaches. Similar but different than recommendation 5. In recommendation 8, there's some additional explanation in the draft transmittal letter, but we recommend that ONC avoid use of the terms targeted query, broadcast query, or RLS, and instead describe things in terms of a functional description. This stems largely from a discovery that when you say broadcast query to industry people, they assume that means a transaction that goes everywhere across the entire network of participant members, across all the QHINs and returns, and would be unscalable. But that is not what TEFCA intends by a broadcast query. So avoiding use of that terms and just describing things in terms of the functional expectation would be clearer. And again, I'll pause for comments or questions.
Great, thanks. Comments or questions about recommendations 7 and 8? John, as an OBGYN, we consider ourselves the masters of all abbreviations, so you've got quite a few in here. Maybe RLS could be expanded on?
Absolutely. So, I'll just explain. I skipped some steps. So record locator service, the assumption when we talk through what a broadcast query means in the context of TEFCA 2, the assumption was that the QHINs, and please, anyone who can jump in and correct me who's on the ONC or ARIAN if I get this wrong, but the assumption is that when a air-quoted TEFCA broadcast query is initiated, that the QHIN or the participant layer below the QHINs are employing a record locator service such that even if you don't know exactly where you're querying for information, your QHIN or the participants under the QHIN would know where that information was and not need to spray a query across the entire network to find it. But that was a little bit hard to tease out.
Yeah, that's right. The MRTCs don't define a record locator service as being required. There are multiple ways for a QHIN to address its functional requirements, but part of the functional requirements of a QHIN when it receives a query is to figure out what participants and participant members and you know what data and locations are applicable in the context of that query. And so that applies either a record locator service or document repository or some other technical, or you know, some internal spray and pray on behalf of the QHIN in order to address that functional requirement. And again, we just want to make sure that that we're not confusing people because we're using industry terms that mean one thing in the context of functional requirements that mean something else.
All right, thanks. So questions, comments about recommendations 7 and 8 do you see displayed now? Okay, John, proceed.
Thank you. Yes, 9A and 9B. Okay, I'm glad that's in red font. So we have, this is another pair, and this requires more discussion, but any feedback is appreciated. So one possibility is that as stated, these are specific to modalities, the three modalities and the seven exchange purposes. As currently stated in the second draft of TEFCA, QHINs are required to serve all defined exchange modalities and purposes, and it's possible that that is exactly right. An alternative is that the ONC and RCEs should allow and support what we are calling specialized QHINs to serve a subset of exchange purposes or modalities. The idea there being, again, you want a well-designed, well-functioning network that is adopted by the industry, and there's sort of an open question as to whether it would make sense for there to be QHINs that can specialize in a modality or a subset of exchange purposes. Pause for comment.
Just as some color commentary, an example of a specialized QHIN might be, for example, a public health enabling QHIN that primarily deals in I forget the term of art that's used in the TEFCA, but primarily deals in push transactions to public health agencies for surveillance activities. And as it stands, that public health QHIN would also have to address all of the other exchange modalities and purposes of use. So the question that the task force is currently working through, and that, you know, if there's a strong perspective on the committee that would be useful, is whether it would make sense to have a special purpose public health QHIN that would only need to address the particular exchange modalities and requirements, and as again against the notion that's expressed in the TEFCA of a single on-ramp that addresses all of the requirements.
All right, thanks. Okay, questions or comments about recommendation 9A and 9B? It looks like Christina, your hand's up.
Hi, thanks. I do think that we should consider some specialized QHINs. I like the idea of looking into the public health one. I would also recommend considering a patient-focused or driven QHIN where the individual can request all of their EHI without the intervention of a clinician or provider organization. I think this will also tie into some of your recommendations that we're going to discuss in the next slide on addressing individual access service.
Thank you.
Okay. Looks like I didn't see the order they came up, but I'll just take them first. Les, you have your hand up?
Yes, I just wanted to second the idea that a specialized QHIN or public health operations may be a good idea. And there are some prototypes on that Georgia Tech is working on with us at MUSC on how to ensure patient confidentiality and appropriate queries for case investigations. So I'm not sure that it should, you know, that the idea here is that you should take one of the national organizations and reserve them for public health. But perhaps there is a way to add to the organizations that can, you know, that are part of connecting at this level with a focus on public health and operations. And I think a patient-centered QM wouldn't be a bad idea either.
Thanks. Stephen, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I just also wanted to chime in support of the idea of allowing flexibility for QHINs. I think that if we're going to have an ecosystem that is innovative and evolves new directions and functionalities, that we need to allow new entrants to come in and serve specialized markets, allowing or requiring each QHIN to be all things to all people, I think is going to stifle innovation.
Okay, thanks. John or Aaron, I didn't give you a chance to respond to the last two comments. If you had anything there before I go to the next person.
Actually, thank you. I have a question I'd like to see if there's a reaction to. If it might be a good idea to have a QHIN specializing in patient individual access services, would it also be potentially okay for there to be a QHIN that did not offer individual access services because they were specializing in other things? I guess perhaps that question has already been answered. If there's a public health focused QHIN I guess I'm just trying to say to confirm the opinions of the committee, there's enthusiasm for considering these specialties. Is it going to be okay to have any QHINs that don't respond to or don't handle individual access services?
Okay. Looks like some people are raising their hand. Stephen, did you want to respond directly to that?
Yeah, I think that you identify a key challenge, John, which is we want to be sure that all of exchange purposes are addressed and that all of the modalities are available and that all of the stakeholders have their needs met. It seems that requiring every QHIN to do everything is a rather blunt instrument, but similarly, if we simply allow QHINs to come forward and do what they want, we may not reach all the goals. So we have to figure out some way that we check all the boxes, but then also support specialized services and innovation. So I'm just thinking out loud here, but wondering if this could come in phases or if there could be multiple paths, that there could be some general purpose QHINs, some come to mind that, you know, have been doing a lot of these things already and could relatively easily expand to do them all, and then kind of a separate track for specialized QHINs, because we don't want to leave anyone out in the cold. We want to meet all of the policy objectives. So I'm musing about how we're going to balance those two goals.
It's Don. One way of looking at the QHINs is that they are supporting the query part of this, and that the HINs would be where the very specializations would come in, right? So some of the things that have just been mentioned, because the HINs would allow that sort of variety in different tasks and one-offs and entrepreneurial activities and public health activities. So I think when you think of this as a network, don't forget the HINs are still all there, right? And that, you know, in part is designed to give maximum bandwidth to the, you know, currently installed base of HIEs. So just to throw that out for consideration.
No, I appreciate that. Speaking personally, hence my question. I'm trying to develop my instincts. On the one hand, a QHIN seems like well, if you're not stepping up to enable what's described in TEFCA 2, all the modalities and all the exchange purposes, then you're not stepping up to be a QHIN. And that sort of frame of that way of thinking suggests that the participants could indeed be specialized and operate through a generalized QHIN that handles whatever they need, and that anybody on the network can take advantage of a specialized participant. The alternative is this what we kind of have captured in 3B, which is that it may make sense, but then the process of has to be managed, I assume, the RCE with the ONC to avoid the slippery slope of pick and choose QHINs versus taking advantage of specialization. So there you have it.
Okay, I also see Steve from ONC, and I guess the only Steve in ONC is Steve Posnick, maybe, but and Carolyn. So, Steve, did you have a comment specifically about this, or was there something new?
Yeah, this is Steve from ONC. I think I'm still the only Steve here right now, but I'd have to check around, at least with the appropriate spelling of Steve, which is with a V, for the record. So I think there's a really important and great discussion you all have had about trade-offs and my other namesake. You know, Stephen Lane really took a lot of the points that I was going to mention earlier when I raised my hand. You know, the trade-offs that you all are discussing and in practice, it's attractive to think about specialization. But, you know, getting back to the goals that I think David raised as well about the purposes of the statute, as well as what the Trust Exchange Framework Common Agreement are set out to do, are important to keep in mind. One of the goals about having stakeholders be able to easily connect, the point that Don just made about specialization at the HIN level, and so it's certainly worth additional discussion among the task force, and there may be an opportunity to identify if there are specific exchange purposes for which specialization would be recommended, and then everything else would be in the, general bucket, so to speak. And there are a variety of different options that you could pursue there, but this is a really important, I would say, like, policy trade-off, as Stephen Lane mentioned, to make sure that everything that we all envisioned collectively would be supported ultimately in the formal execution of the work.
Yes, and this is Elise, also from ONC. Just to ping on what Steve said, I think the other component why this is so important is having this background as the RCE begins to do this, their work will also help inform their activities. So to the extent that there is, some considerations about specialization or where that might be critical, or even where having kind of a very diversified QHIN would also be helpful, being able to share that information with the RCE as they move us towards or help us move towards a full common agreement, I think is also valuable.
All right, thanks. Carolyn, you have your hand up as well.
Hey, thanks, Robert. A comment and a question. First, the comment, going back to the notion of specialty, thinking out loud, if we have the specialty public health QHINs, for example, I would think that if I am getting some kind of healthcare service from my local public health group, whether that's immunizations for my kids or family planning services for myself, or some other kinds of services, that information is something that I should be able to request and receive as I would from any other kind of QHIN. The fact that they are a specialty group or a public health QHIN should not preclude my ability to get that medical information about myself like any other organization. And then to get to the question, Les had mentioned that we might also look at patient-centered QHINs. I'm wondering if he could talk more about what he envisions that involving. I think most patient and consumer advocacy groups would expect that every QHIN would be patient-centered to the degree that patients can get whatever information they need and that that should be baked in. So I'd like to hear more details, please. Thank you.
Hey, Carolyn, this is Arian, not Les, but this is something we've discussed in the task force, and the notion would be that there would be organizations that would specialize in connecting patients, and in so doing would primarily be concerned with Q-HIN-to-Q-HIN queries for patient access purposes, as opposed to being general purpose Q-HIN. So, you know, I think you're right that the obligation of a Q-HIN, with one exception that we've noted relative to public health for surveillance purposes, there's an obligation to always respond for patient access queries. The question really is there a role for an organization to be specialized in assisting patients on the patient side of this with getting access to their own information and depositing it in a place of their choosing?
Okay, thanks, Arian.
Christina, you have your hand up?
Yeah, so I just wanted to think about this a little bit more, like with the patient-centered QHIN. It's something I've been thinking about for a while, and I do think it's really important. I understand there are challenges, but as we see like growing amount of use cases where direct access for consumers to come in and access their health information becomes greater, I think it's something that we should really consider. Right now, it's dependent on current ecosystems and organizations for patients to go to individual places to access their health information, and that's really not conducive to a patient gathering all of their health information. I think there are a growing number of use cases. I know we'll get it on your individual access slide. You bring up the need for broader functionality for individuals to access their information. And you think of an example you put on here is the Precision Medicine Initiative. Well, for the Precision Medicine Initiative, I, as a patient, go out and collect all of my health information and then contribute it to the All of Us research program. But it's still on me to go out and gather all of that data. That's one example. And then another one that recently came across my inbox was a survey that the Social Security Administration put out, and it was a consumer-directed exchange feasibility study. And they were looking to see if they could explore integrating consumer-directed exchange for disability applicants. Currently, it's my understanding that they have an applicant applying for disability benefits, sign an authorization form, and then a caseworker goes out to all of the providers of that applicant and tries to get the data that is needed. And it's a long process that is very costly. But if we had a place where the patient could easily come in and access all of their information and then hand it to a caseworker, such as a disability claim specialist, I think that's just a lot more of it's a streamlined process and just something that we really need to start thinking about. So those are just two use cases. I could come up with a whole lot more. I think that if we have this place that we can access consumer data more broadly, we're also going to see innovative apps come in. I know that the National Association for Trusted Exchange, or NATE, tried to do this a couple years ago to make the blue button functionality work. When I was working as an app developer, I was really excited about this concept and joined for this reason, so that I could access data across the whole ecosystem and provide it to patients and do really cool things with it. I think we were a little ahead of the market, but I think that if we can get the TEFCA to work, that there is
still a need, and I'd like to discuss it more and get other people's thoughts.
So this is John. I'd reflect back that so this is speaking for what's in my own head, not the task force. Christina, it's super helpful. My question that I'm trying to develop my own TEFCA intuition is, so is the best means to that end that they're in the context of this specific recommendation, is the best means to that end to have a QHIN that's really good at that and doesn't have to do other stuff, and therefore it becomes known to individuals that is the place to establish their direct relationship? Or on the contrary, we want individual access services, whatever those end up being, to be embraced and adopted across TEFCA, and we're expecting, as drafted, all participants, all QHINs, all participant members to be capable of responding to IAS queries, and I would expect I'm inferring that the hope of the ONC would be that individual access services offering those services would be embraced at many points across the TEFCA network at the participant member level, at the participant level, and at the QHIN level, because individuals can declare their direct relationship any place at any level in TEFCA. So does establishing a patient-specialized QHIN make that better, or are you just discouraging or giving that QHIN a competitive advantage against others in the network who were eager to offer IAS services? That's a rhetorical question, but I'm happy if anybody wants to respond to it.
Yeah, I'd like to respond. There might be some patient, this is Wes, there might be some services for that kind of a network where that we're focused on this notion of patient-centered data exchange, where the data were first downloaded to the patient's smartphone and then uploaded to the target agency. But with that, you would need to maintain prominence of the data as it was being assembled and have sort of a secondary record of where the sources came from that might be accessible, so that activities focused on patient-centered exchange then might have, you know, in this sort of enhanced provenance type of infrastructure that would better support this particular activity. So I could see then that a patient QHIN would be focused on, you know, providing this enhanced provenance along with it's not so much delivering the data to the patient that it's unique. It's allowing the patient to use the data in for HIE with provenance that's coupled with it. So again, this is way beyond, way in the weeds, but it sort of says, well, I'm just giving you a use case where a patient QHIN would be different than a general QHIN, because the different QHINs might just download the data. The patient QHIN might make it possible for them to download it then upload it again.
Thank you.
Christina, you had your hand up as well.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily needs to be one or the other. Just to go back to John's statement, I do think that there needs to be a patient-focused QHIN, but that doesn't mean that other QHINs can't provide patient-focused services. I think that by offering both, like if you have within the individual QHIN functionality that allow access to the information within the individual QHIN, that's a really positive thing. And then this broader QHIN that stands alone and really represents the consumers and consumer-facing organizations, I think that also needs to be in place. And I think that you'll see different apps and devices and models show up. So, for example, if you have a QHIN focused on a certain type of patient population, then that QHIN might do an initiative that offers data and access to information
to support its users and participants. But then you've also got that broad scale, like bigger QHIN that represents the patient, where the data and information from the individual QHIN could also be accessed by that single access point. So then I think I was getting a little confusing. So let me think about how I was going to say this. I do think that they are, they can be separate, that QHIN that represents consumers, and then QHINs can individually have consumer consumer strategies within their own organizations. But I do think that that main QHIN that has access to all of the health information, where anybody can come in that's not within a specific individual ecosystem, is really important.
Thank you.
John or Arian, comments about things that have been discussed here? Just give you a chance to comment.
No, I just also, appreciate the... Go ahead.
I was also going to say there's a couple of comments in the public comment and chat line. I don't know if everybody can see that or not. I think everyone can see it if you're online.
Yes. Well, I just appreciate the input, and it's the openness to it, but the need to manage the there's a lot of variables that go into consideration of allowing specialization, but good input, and need time to think, and we'll discuss it with the task force.
Great, thanks. Other questions or comments about recommendation 9A or B, or any other point that we've discussed at this stage in the presentation? All right. Seeing none, John, you want to go to the next one?
Okay. I apologize that recommendation 10A and 10B is a little bit deceptive in the way we presented this, in that this is an either or. And the committee, the task force is has articulated both these positions, and we have more discussion, would value input. So 10B is basically saying that individual access services should start as somewhat as described in TEFCA 2, with encouragement that they should be expanded over time. So it is a little bit closer to what's drafted in TEFCA 2 now. I'm trying to be clear. It's individual access services exchange purposes that are described is a good starting point, but there's more capabilities that individuals will need that should be appropriately worked in via the RCE-ONC relationship. Recommendation 10A acknowledges that there are several use cases aimed at individuals that go beyond what is articulated in the exchange individual access exchange purposes that are described in TEFCA 2, which are pretty much just limited to obtaining and accessing a copy of their EHI. So we offer in recommendation 10A, and Christina alluded to at least one or two of those, additional capabilities that might be considered for expansion of IAS immediately. Pausing for comments or questions.
Thanks. Comments or questions about 10B or 10A here? Okay, we can come back when we need to. John, proceed.
Recommendation 11. Next slide, please. So recommendation 11 is around some confusion that we've encountered with the capitalized defined term direct relationship. So two things in recommendation A is to clarify whether all participating entities must respond to requests for individual access services or only those with a direct relationship to the individual, meaning that we feel that whatever the intent of the, I believe, I don't know if ONC is willing to clarify that, yes, you're right, John, or no, that's not right, John. I believe the intent is that an individual who declares a direct relationship, whether it be at the participant, member, participant, or QHIN level, that if they exercised their asked for example, copy of their record, that their the organization they have a direct relationship with is just their means to access the TEFCA ecosystem, and that transaction would go across the ecosystem, across all QHINs, down all branches, and get an appropriate response to their query, versus asking for clarification, or for it to be clarified in the actual TEFCA, whether instead it's really that the individual would be transacting with the organization where they've declared a direct relationship. That's one thing we're asking to clarify. I'll pause if anyone from the ONC wants to comment. Going on, the other is just embedded in recommendation 11 is the request for just to clarifying the meaning of the term direct relationship. Does it refer to a declared a relationship an individual is declaring with a TEFCA QHIN participant or participant member that offers IAS and saying, hey, I'm declaring my direct relationship with you, you're where I want to get my individual access services, or is that direct relationship, capital D, capital R, have a broader meaning? We're just asking for that to be more clearer. Recommendation 11A, which I want to acknowledge requires more discussion, is that there the implication that public health agencies will want to participate in the TEFCA ecosystem. It is considered that they may not. It might be appropriate to not require all public health agencies to respond to individual access services, except where required by law. Let me give example of where this is coming from. If you have any experience with local health departments, the burden that would be created on those local health departments to respond to individual access services with all modalities would be difficult, to say the least. However, if that local health department is a provider and therefore a covered entity as defined by HIPAA, then they would be required to respond. We also noted that there may be exceptions where public health agencies should be required to respond to individual access services. For example, immunization registries, which are set up to as a registry to contain comprehensive information and be able to respond directly to the individual. So with that, I'll pause for comments or questions or any color commentary on A or 11 or 11A.
Great. Comments or questions on 11, 11A? I think John was asking if there was ONC comments as well. Aaron, I don't know if you had other comments you wanted to add to John's.
Nope.
somewhat in line with some of the other discussion about public health agencies and specialization as well. Okay, seeing no comments or questions, no hands raised, you can proceed.
Thank you. So noting that, as I mentioned at the very beginning, these are partial. This is we are not all the way through our charge. Where we stand now, we are part of the way through privacy and security remains, so there'll be more recommendations coming. The final three recommendations, 12, 13, and 14, are the beginnings of our discussion on privacy specific to meaningful choice. Next slide, please. So recommendation 12 is suggesting that ONC should clarify the policy goals around meaningful choice, but leave the granular technical requirements of how it's implemented to the RCE, but also encouraging that meaningful choice is not just a quote-unquote check-the-box exercise, and that it provides meaningful information and opportunity for discussion about where an individual's EHI will be used and disclosed. There's a very well-crafted list of suggestions of the characteristics that the meaningful choice consent might conform to, and can't take credit, nor can the task force take credit for those. Those are from the HIT Policy Committee Privacy and Security Tiger Team, some work that they did in 2010. Pausing for comments, color commentary, or questions.
Comments or questions on recommendation 12? Okay, I don't see any hands up. Don't hear any comments. Sean, proceed.
Thank you. Next slide, please. So both of these recommendations are require more discussion, as noted. Recommendation 13 is contemplates whether participants in TEFCA, once an individual exercises their right to meaningful choice, the way that it's drafted, it says that that is a applies to applies prospectively, and that information exchanged on that individual prior to their exercise of meaningful choice could continue to be used and disclosed for anything that was permitted. The question is, should that be the case? There's an acknowledgement that we in the task force, we talked about kind of the right to the TEFCA as two as drafted acknowledges the extreme difficulty in implementing a right to be forgotten for information that has been previously disclosed and shared across the network, but there's also an acknowledgement that individuals might have that desire. That's recommendation 13 that's being discussed. And then also recommendation 14 is a couple of aspects of what meaningful choice really means in terms of how it should be implemented. Would it imply only to an individual's information as exchanged within TEFCA, or is that meaningful choice expected to apply more broadly? My understanding from my ONC education is that TEFCA can a meaningful choice exercised under TEFCA can only apply to TEFCA transactions. So we have to think about, as a task force and as a committee, what the implications are for the individual who's not probably going to appreciate what information is being exchanged within the TEFCA ecosystem and via other means, so that if they exercise their meaningful choice, and that limits the use only of TEFCA-defined modalities and exchange purposes, that they might find that confusing. And then the last bullet under recommendation four is noting that meaningful choice clarification as to whether it is are you expressing your meaningful choice that you don't want your information to be further used or disclosed to the organization you have a direct relationship, and therefore they will honor that meaningful choice, or is it to be communicated and implemented across all of TEFCA, or is it to be communicated and implemented up your QHIN branch? So there's some language in the draft that says, hey, if you get if you're a participant member or QHIN and an individual expresses meaningful choice, you're to communicate that to your QHIN. Where is that right to apply? To the direct relationship, to the QHIN branch where is it communicated, or up and down throughout the entire TEFCA ecosystem? Some clarification in that regard. Again, pausing for comments or questions.
Thanks, John. I'd also say that on our agenda, we were scheduled to go till 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 9:30 a.m. Pacific Time, and we had a public comment period scheduled at 12:15 p.m. Eastern Time. We're obviously running a little bit ahead of schedule, and I'm certainly not. I know you all know how obligated I am to our public comment periods that we advertise. We will not extend the meeting till 12:15. So all of those that are listening on the phone now, if you have public comments you'd like to make, I would ask you to start thinking about preparing those comments, because I think what we'll have to do is open the public comment period at the end of our committee discussions, and that might be earlier than 12:15 p.m. So just to give you that notice now, I wanted to say that before we continue our discussion here. And so with that, I'll also solicit comments or questions about recommendations 13 and 14. Terry, I see your hand up.
Thank you. First of all, this is an incredibly nuanced and thoughtful discussion, and thank you all for all the work that went into doing it. And my question is not only on 13 and 14, but back to 11 on sort of the direct relationship. It seems to me that in the background there's got to be a model for how the network, the ecosystem, is actually set up. And I can see two somewhat competing models. One is that the individual, the patient, is at the center and connects directly with everybody almost indiscriminately. And the other is that the individual connects to the QHIN for which they have a direct relationship, and that entity does the coordinating, imposes the privacy barriers, enables exchange. So I'm kind of torn between those two models and wonder what's the model in the background? Thank you.
Yeah, so Les, the current TEFCA 2 draft is the latter model, the one where an individual designates the participant or participant organization that's participating with QHIN, that's their direct relationship, and then they could designate more than one, but at least one, and that organization kind of serves as their proxy relative to all of the concerns that you noted.
Aaron, can you expand a little bit on that? Sort of how does that then impact sort of the privacy controls.
Yeah, so that's exactly part of what we're hoping for ONC to clarify in the final version. But the way that I think it's intended to work, and I'd welcome ONC comment here, is that, you know, let's say I've got a relationship with, let's say, my phone vendor, or I have a relationship with my local provider. And that's the organization that gives me an opportunity via meaningful choice to help me understand information flows, how information will be used, and other key considerations regarding my participation, and gives me the opportunity to make decisions relative to my participation. And then the question that we're raising is, so then what? Who's got the response? Is there a corresponding responsibility to communicate my choices, my elections, to other QHINs, so that they can use that material? Or are my elections relative to meaningful choice kept only locally, and it's the QHIN that I'm connected with that's responsible for managing those elections? So that's really the key question that we're getting after. But again, just to be really clear, the assumption in TEFCA 2 is that I, as an individual, have a direct relationship with a QHIN, a participant, or a participant member. And I gave two examples of where that might be: my mobile phone provider, or my local provider, and then all of the meaningful choice and discussion get done locally, and as I said, then we're raising the question, okay, then what?
Yeah, hi, and this is Zoe from ONC, and just want to make a clarifying point about that sort of chain of communication of where meaningful choice goes. So currently the way it's drafted, the participating entity that has the direct relationship with the individual who exercises their meaningful choice is responsible for communicating the meaningful choice up the chain to the QHIN that they participate with. And then that QHIN is responsible for then communicating that across all of the other QHINs in the network. And that's sort of where it stops, right? So I want to make the differentiation that I think the question that we're asking here is, does that meaningful choice, once it goes to all of the other QHINs in the network, do all of the other QHINs in the network then have a responsibility to communicate that meaningful choice all the way down to the participants and participant members within their individual network? So presumably, the way it's written today, if an individual exercises their meaningful choice in one QHIN, and then they go to a participant or a provider that's participating in another QHIN, that participant member, that provider, might not know that the individual has exercised that meaningful choice. So they may, communicate, they may send or exchange their information all the way back up, and the meaningful choice wouldn't stop until it got all the way up to the QHIN. So I think what we're really asking is the scope of how far and wide the meaningful choice should be communicated across the TEFCA network. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Thanks, Brett. Other comments or questions about 13 and 14 specifically, but we're really coming to the point where we're going to take comments about the entire suite of recommendations here from the task force. Les?
Yes, I just wanted to comment that this sounds technically challenging. Distributing these these requests for information across the network, which may or may not be aware of an individual, it would be almost as if every QHIN would have to know and have a record for every individual in the country.
John, Aaron, ONC, comments?
Not me. We just have a lot to think about and more work to do.
Okay. So I want to also take progress of the chair. As was mentioned at the opening by Dr. Rucker, one of our members, Dr. Patrick Soon-Xiong, has resigned from the committee. He just dialed in, and I had mentioned to him that I would give him an opportunity to share his comments. Pat, hi, are you on?
Yes, I am. Thank you for giving me the time here.
So as I was just mentioning, the committee heard from our national coordinator this morning that you would be leaving the committee. And I know you've got, I think you told me your hands were full with running the LA Times and seeking out a cure for cancer. And I'm sure there's lots more behind all that. But we certainly appreciate your participation, both in person and phone. And I'll give you the floor for a couple minutes here. And I appreciate you dialing in this morning.
No, first of all, I want to appreciate and thank you for giving me the time. And I just wanted to say to the committee, it's been an amazing honor and privilege to have worked not just with this committee, but with the administrations and administrations past and this administration on trying to solve what you're doing. And you're doing such important work with regard to all the issues of healthcare and interoperability. And I wanted to ensure and thank you, Robert, for literally giving me the time to share just not only my thoughts, but to share the reasons why since we took over the LA Times and since the work that we've been doing on the cancer vaccine, it was really very difficult for me to attend as many meetings. And I just felt very, very guilty that I wasn't contributing as much as I could. And if the slot could be used better by somebody who had more time. And it wasn't that the work that you do is unimportant, it's critically important to the nation. I want to thank you truly for allowing me to participate as much as I could. I'm happy to say that the work we're doing the work we're doing in cancer is really bearing fruit. We've now, over the course of the last 2 years, received authorization from the FDA on 20 INDs, which I think is a record, to test the hypothesis that we can induce what we call immunogenic cell death in patients with cancer. And we've have some very exciting data that we're about to announce literally in the next few months, both in triple-negative breast cancer, bladder cancer, head and neck cancer. So not that that's an excuse of why I'm resigning, but it is quite factually correct. And thank you for sharing that, Robert. The LA Times has been all-consuming as we initiated. And yesterday was my one-year anniversary. And it was important for me to give some time to that paper because I think it's an important opportunity for us to have a voice from California. But I also want you to know that I'll be thinking of the work you do and we're watching the work you do. And thank you again for the opportunity. Robert, thank you for the time to allow me to just say a few words. And I'm happy to take any questions either you or anybody may have, but I'm sure you've got more things to do, but if I've got...
Sure. I just had mentioned we're running a little bit ahead of schedule, so I think we have a little bit of time here. If anybody has any questions or comments for Patrick, this would be appropriate as well now in the committee.
Don Rucker, the National Coordinator. Yeah, Patrick, I want to thank you for... I know you've been busy, but I want to thank you for, as a citizen, throwing your hat in the ring here working to address these things, and best wishes for your future endeavors.
Well, thank you, Tom. Really appreciate it. And it doesn't mean I won't be working with the government agencies and in any way I can, shape I can, that I certainly will. But as I said, until I can address what I'm doing on the cancer thing, I think I better just focus for a while.
Right. Well, like all members, it's really, I think we're all very grateful for the time, experience, and expertise that you and everybody on the committee have been sharing to improve health and intersection with technology. So again, yes, as Don said, best of luck with all your endeavors. And again, we appreciate the opportunity to work with you and look forward to future opportunities to work with you down the road.
Thank you so much, Bob. Okay, well, thank you
very much.
Welcome
to stay on as long as you want, and we're going to return back to our discussion of the TEFCA at this point. But again, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So back to the issues that we were discussing. Other questions, comments about the entire suite of recommendations from your TEFCA task force? I'll take those for John and Arian at this time. Okay. Other closing comments from the task force chairs, John, Arian?
No, not me. Thank you. We got
just fantastic
more.
Discussion.
We got a call tomorrow.
Okay. Well, you guys have done a lot of work, and the entire task force. We appreciate that. A lot of details here. All right. So as I mentioned before, we are running ahead of schedule. And we certainly won't extend the committee meeting waiting for the designated time for public comment. So I'm going to turn it over to Lauren to set up the public comments.
Thank you, Robert. And the phone number is displayed. And operator, can we please open the public line?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And while we're giving folks time to dial in, I'll just remind everyone that our next full committee meeting is scheduled for July 11th, hoping to wrap up the rest of the TEFCA recommendations. The next two TEFCA task force calls scheduled, one for tomorrow and June 24th. So we welcome the public and the other HITECH members to join as you are able. There's also a ISP task force meeting on June 25th and a USCDI task force meeting on June 28th. So just wanted to share the upcoming meetings for your awareness. And all of the meetings I just mentioned can be found on the calendar on the HITECH page at healthit.gov. And at this point, I'll ask the operator if we have any comments in the queue.
We have none at this time.
Okay. Robert and Carol, I'll hand it back to you for any closing remarks.
Great. Thanks, Lauren. Well, certainly from my point of view, thanks to the committee and thanks to the task forces, both on the annual report and the TEFCA comments for all of your hard work in this area. I think we had a good discussion on a number of points today. I'm sure the TEFCA task force and the annual report task force welcomes any additional comments that may come to mind after the call. I think we're in a good place on both of those, and ask that the committee send along comments to them as they occur to you. We have one more meeting to review and finalize our recommendations to the national coordinator in the area of TEFCA, so be ready for that as well. And thanks for allowing me to indulge Patrick Sun-Xiong as he departs the committee as well. And with that, I'll wish you all a good summer, and I look forward to our next call, and I'll turn it over to Carolyn for her closing comments as well.
Thanks, Robert.
I just want to reiterate Robert's thanks for the good work that we did today and for the work of the TEFCA. And again, encourage those in interest, please, to share feedback and comments with that task force so we can ensure that we provide recommendations that represent the full perspective of the PITAC. And look forward to working with you in the next meeting next month. Thank you.
Was that Lauren? Do you adjourn us, I think?
Okay. Yep, that's it. Thank you, everyone. We'll adjourn for today.
Thank you.